You never want to find yourself out on the water fishing without the essentials. So it's best to always pack a Columbia PFG Solar Stream Elite hoodie to protect against the sun. I mean, it provides great protection and it's really breathable so you don't get hot. That's a win-win. Columbia PFG has a lot of great gear. So before you head out on the water, head over to Columbia.com/PFG to shop their performance fishing gear.
The Kakadu plum is an Australian native superfood containing 100 times more vitamin C than oranges. So why have you never heard of it? PR. No one's drinking a Kakadu smoothie? I'm J.B. Smoove, and that was a full episode of my new podcast, Straightforward, inspired by guaranteed straightforward pricing from AT&T Fiber. Get what you want without the complicated. AT&T Fiber, live like a gigillionaire. Available wherever you get your podcast. Limited availability in select areas. Visit AT&T.com/hypergig for details.
When you buy Kroger brand products, you feel like you're winning. That's because they offer proven quality at lower than low prices. In fact, we guarantee that you and your family will love how Kroger brand products taste, or you get your money back. So next time you're shopping for the family, look for delicious Kroger brand products, because they'll make you all feel like you're winning. Shop now, in-store, or online. Kroger, fresh for everyone.
Hey, listen.
Remember that one game we covered that was the beast hunting game? What was that? Monster Hunter World? No. It's like a few years ago. It had like an insane user interface where it was just like covered in bullshit.
Evolution.
Evolution. That's a game that if we had not been working for Cracked, I would never have played that. I had no interest in that game at all.
How long did you play it?
Enough to write an escort mission about it. So like, 20 hours? I don't know, a while.
All right.
You know, we're all dedicated. I mean, it's all right, man. That's okay. There's worse ways to make a buck, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah.
All right, let's get rolling.
Yeah. We've been rolling, my friend. We're synced.
Oh.
You know?
Do you know which one you want to do first?
I was thinking, I just finished Control this morning, and I kind of wanted to talk about it because I like have very fresh opinions.
Is there any kind of intro, or are we already in the midst of the episode?
Well, I'm sure a future editor will decide whether we were hilarious here or worthy of omitting. Can't say. I mean, maybe they want to hear all the behind-the-scenes stuff of how IGN and Cracked work.
Of course they do. And this should be in.
And how our passions are utterly fake for their entertainment.
Hey, editor, leave this in.
It's probably going to be me. So
that's
you know.
I was like, who are you? Who are you referring to? It'll either be you or Abe.
Right.
I don't know what you mean. The editor. All right. Welcome to One Upsmanship.
Welcome to One Upsmanship. Absolutely.
I'm Michael Swain.
And I'm
voice.
Adam Ganser. And I'm his voice.
And we're talking Control, as you knew when you clicked the title.
Sure you did. Although, let's be honest, is this a well-known game? Like, how well-known?
Control?
Yeah. How well-known would you say this is?
The consensus around the IGN office, which I'm still getting up to speed with, but it, from what I can gather, is that critics loved it, but my understanding is the sales are low.
That's not surprising.
It didn't get played by a lot of people. It didn't get a lot of buzz or anything. But everyone who plays video games professionally and so picked it up because it's a Remedy release. Remedy's the developer.
Sure.
Anyone who felt obligated to play it, played it and was like, that was surprisingly good. That was very fun.
Right.
You know what I mean? That's the general consensus.
It's like the lasagna cat of video game content.
It's like if you haven't stumbled across lasagna cat, your life is no poorer. But if you have,
it's certainly richer. Yeah, yeah.
It's a little bonus along life's path.
Yeah. You've gotten some quality content out of that.
Yeah, if the words Fatal Frame mean something to you, your life is the richer for it.
Or if you just like Old Spice commercials.
Did they do those?
They did the ones where
the best ones.
The mother is singing and like bizarrely floating behind the children. They did that one.
That makes sense.
Oh, it's so
good. And they do a lot of Major Lazer music videos, I know that. And this all makes sense. They're great guys, and they're really funny, and they're incredibly creative.
It's one of my favorite videos to show to film students because they hate it like instinctively because of the filmmaking part of it.
What,
and
Lasagna
then,
Cat?
Yeah.
The sketch series?
Yes, they hate it because of the filmmaking, right? And it's like, and you can see why. And also most film students, in my experience, don't consume internet content. And don't realize, hey, you're going to be working here in like 10 minutes. So you better get up to speed, bro.
So they don't think mimetic shit is funny. They're too stuck up for that still. Or
they don't
too like
think
film is important.
They don't think of the stuff on the internet as like artistic content and don't consume it like that. And that will rapidly change as time goes
the
on.
The level of attention to detail and craftsmanship that goes into Lasagna Cat.
Yeah.
And I'm not referring to the fact that it's a green screen. Yeah, it's just guys in front of a green screen.
Totally.
The thought behind it is intensely clever and hard to like. A lot of work went into Lasagna Cat, you guys.
A lot of thought
went into it.
I regularly show them the Final Fantasy episode because
that's
it's,
the best one.
Yeah, and it's also the funniest jokes, I would argue.
Skills.
Yeah, exactly. I love that
skills.
Joke. Exactly.
Oh my God. All right, let's get to the topic at hand. this is nominally a video game podcast.
Sure.
And we're covering Control, and we gave a little spiel about it, but we'll get more in depth after we pass our first checkpoint. Which means that the walls around us have geometrically seeded to a more sane position. Everything feels comfortable and safe. The lighting came up a bit. We claimed a control point. All is well. And that means it's time for...
I guess. It never gets rid of all the floating people. None of the floating people ever disappear. They just like keep getting hung by invisible strings from the roof.
Are they dead or just... in a trance?
I mean, is anybody dead in this game? It's hard to tell. I mean,
well,
it's hard to say.
When I shoot at the floating people, am I taking a life? That's what I'm getting at.
that's the most important thing. I don't know.
Because I do, Adam. I shoot at the floating people.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. You got to know what happens. We all got to know what happens.
Yeah. You got to test the limits.
Yeah.
but this is speedrun.
Yeah.
Adam, I played and beat this game shortly after it came out because it just happened to sync up. It's not a long game, and I wasn't playing any game at the time, and it looked interesting, and I immediately got hooked and I finished it. But as a result, I'm a little fuzzy on some of the detail stuff because I beat it like a month and a half ago. So do you want to take the speed run?
Yeah, I'll take the speed run. It's okay.
All right.
I'm not going to look it up even. I'm just going to go from memory.
Okay. I have the Wikipedia open so I can correct you if
fair.
It becomes a desperate situation. Start the clock.
Now, Control is a desperate situation, by which I mean it's a story of a woman who is the, I guess, self-appointed director of a federal bureau called the Federal Bureau of Control that seems to operate like the Room of Requirement in that it appears only for those who deserve to be there. In it, she discovers that this being she is aware of named Polaris is trying to get her to sort of prevent this other, an invasion of separate, of like other separate consciousnesses that they label the Hiss that have taken over all the employees of this bureau except for a couple of key expositors. We discover as the game goes along, which by the way, it's sort of a third person. I'd call it a hack and slash. It's not quite. It's like a third-person shooter. And as we go along, we discover that this woman, Jessie is her name, and her brother, whose name is Dylan, were part of an event in which these entities first intersected with our reality, and that event has sort of been playing out in this bureau's history over the subsequent, I don't know, 15 years or whatever it is. She's there to save her brother. The story is about whether that is even possible, and the story of what are these beings, what does it mean, and she must navigate a modern cubist surreal world that takes the form of a government building in order to save her brother and this office and determine whether she is in fact the director. And that's all.
Stop the clock.
Oh, you left seconds on. You left some seconds on.
You waited before saying now. So I thought I'd balance it out.
That was for drama.
Her name is Jessie Fade In.
Yes.
Fade Out on your chances of having a speedrun record. Because I sabotaged you.
You really did. That was a real hiss move.
Yeah, the hiss. I think the only like buzzword you didn't hit upon, unless I just didn't hear it, was the service weapon.
Yes, which is an object of power, a thing that sort of, you could call them checkpoints.
What's the name of the fungus? The fungus that grows?
I think it's just called the mold. Am I wrong?
The mold. Okay. It might just be called the mold. And Ati, you didn't mention Ati.
Oh, the janitor? Yeah, I did not mention the janitor.
Yeah, so let's get into it. We'll pass another checkpoint, which means we killed things that were people mere moments ago.
And cleared out a set of satellites that have been drawn, have drawn an X on the floor, which helps you fast travel.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. What is the narrative reason for those? I can't remember.
For the control points?
Yes. Do you remember?
I don't remember.
I don't either.
But they're in the oldest house. We didn't say that either. That's what it's called.
I just,
as a lover of words, I'm like, the buzzwords that they invented for this are very cool.
They're cool, but they're not overdoing it. Like, it's all dialed in to the right amount, I would argue.
I think so, yeah. All right, so let's, what happens now? Rants? Okay.
Yes,
sir. I guess I'll go. So player one plugging in for a rant. Here we go. No clock involved.
Lucky for you. Holy shit, would I be sabotaging.
My rant is that, first of all, Remedy, the developer, also made Alan Wake.
Yes.
Alan Wake is spoken about at the IGN offices with reverence by most of the people, and it comes up a lot.
Interesting.
And I just have to shut up because I didn't play Alan Wake. I'm aware of it. I've heard the name Alan Wake, and I know that it is... and this could be wildly inaccurate because this is not the Alan Wake episode. And as I just said, I haven't played it. But my impression, just from osmosis of pop culture, is that the gameplay is not exactly like the Telltale games. It's no combat. It's mostly story driven, and it's some kind of intense sci-fi drama story.
There is combat. Controls are pretty good. It's a pretty good analog for it, honestly. Like, it definitely, they feel like cousins. The difference being Alan Wake is a little bit more in the Twin Peaks zone.
Oh, okay.
Like, literally a Twin Peaks-esque story. It takes place in a woodsy area. This guy's a novelist, etc.
Oh, okay. And then they made Quantum Break, which is very similar. So Control feels like the next evolution of Quantum Break. And that makes sense because they base their games around a proprietary engine that only they develop with, that they coded, called the Northlight engine. And its strength, or at least what they seem to be utilizing it so far toward, is better and better simulation of what it would be like to have telekinetic powers, and Control is the best one so far. And they wrapped it around a story that feels very like X-Files if it took place in the 40s, and I like that. The end of my rant would be that I found the ending very sudden and truncated. I thought the game would be significantly longer. It felt weirdly paced, but I'll compare it to Marvel's Spider-Man. The actual bread and butter experience, I've never more felt like, I'm telekinetic. That's really nice. That's very satisfyingly feeling like I'm telekinetic. Just the ability to grab any fucking thing world.
Yeah, that's cool.
Including if you're in an empty room, chunks of the wall will rip out. It's like, you're telekinetic. You can grab matter, any matter, and you can throw it. I enjoy that very much. The service weapon, all the art style is very heavy-handed, but I say that in a positive way. Like, I think they really let themselves off the chain and went all out with, again, I don't know how far Alan Wake pushed it, but this is very, they bet all their chips on one artistic direction, and I think it paid off largely. I don't know about the full motion video bits, but we'll get into that in more detail. That's my rant.
Interesting. What a great rant. So I'm going to step in as player two, and here's my
blop,
rant.
Blop, blop, blop.
Yeah. Oh, see, we should be taking these sound effects. Mm-hmm. So I think this game is the best I've seen out of Remedy, because I did play Quantum Break, and I definitely played Alan Wake. And this feels like it learned the lessons from both those games, and it's a better version of both of those games. I really like the atmosphere. I really like the narrative. I like the sort of quirky sci-fi feeling to it. I think the gameplay is okay. And I think I thought Alan Wake's gameplay was okay. I thought Quantum Break's gameplay was a little more creative, but less fun. So I think this is like a
what
B
does that
minus.
Mean?
I'll say more.
Okay. Okay. Good.
I think that it's not that fun to kill these, possessed agents. I think there's not that much variety of enemy. There's probably like six different types of enemies. It's not a lot. I don't think the guns are great. I think they're fine. And by guns, I mean gun that changes shapes and does different.
I think that's a cool idea narratively. You only ever have one gun. Yeah.
Every idea here narratively is like A. Like this is like a solid A narratively. And I think it's like a B minus gameplay wise.
Sure.
Like that's my opinion of it, which is to say it's a very good game. Like I really think it's very good. But I found myself like just wanting to get through all these checkpoints just to get the narrative. Like I enjoyed walking around and I enjoyed the story and I kind of enjoyed killing the enemies. But towards the end, I was getting very frustrated with like, okay, I get it. You know, these three shield guys are going to show up. I get it. Let me kill them so I can get the next story checkpoint, please. And the game was like, no, we're going to keep bringing more of these shielded guys and more of these like floating half bodies that blow up and, you know, then there's going to be like seven or eight more and you're like, ugh. And also, and I know this is going to sound like petty, but I really believe this. It's really dumb anytime you have a game where you can't heal if you just sort of wait for a while. Like that's such a standard thing in games. And the fact that they took it away from you in this game and then barrage you with enemies is like, well, that's not challenging. That's frustrating. You know what I mean? Like build a situation that's challenging, not a dynamic that I don't like. That's my biggest critique of the game, actually. Which sounds like I don't like it. I do. I'm just trying to be a little bit more grounded, if you will, about how good the game itself is. That's my rant.
Today I'm going to give you some straightforward advice on how to deal with naughty kids. How about instead of timeouts, time ins? Time for you to start paying some bills. I'm JB Smoove, and that was a full episode of my new podcast, Straightforward. Inspired by guaranteed straightforward pricing from AT&T Fiber. Get what you want without the complicated. AT&T Fiber, live like a gigillionaire. Available wherever you get your podcast. Limited availability in select areas. Visit AT&T.com/hypergig for details.
Open a limited-time 11-month certificate at Kemba Financial Credit Union. At 5.25% APY, it's more than triple the national average, plus it's a safe and secure way to grow your money. Visit your local branch or kemba.org/cd for details. Offer expires May 31st, 2024. APY equals annual percentage yield. Restrictions apply. $500 minimum and $250,000 maximum deposit. Advantage status required. Comparison based on bank rate average. Federally insured by NCUA.
Zero Foxtrot isn't just a brand, it's a way of life. Founded and operated by veterans, Zero Foxtrot's unique apparel and gear echoes the grit of the warrior culture. Zero Foxtrot dedicates itself to producing content, honoring the sacrifices of forgotten heroes of the past, and connecting history to the present. Embark on a journey with Zero Foxtrot today at ZeroFoxtrot.com. It's not merely our products, it's about the ethos that we embody. Rugged, resilient, and timeless.
Wow.
I know.
Checkpoint, game on.
Yeah.
I could not disagree more.
Really?
Just about the life thing. I think you are spoiled. Or like,
oh, sure.
GoldenEye, you need pickups. Or there's so many different ways to skin the cat of how is life mimicked. And I think the falsest of all, that's one of my problems with Halo, Destiny, Call of Duty. Call of Duty. Have you played the newest one yet?
I love the newest one, actually. I really like it quite a bit.
It's very realistically evoking what it would be like to do counterinsurgency work in the modern day. But the one thing that makes no sense is...
Right, healing. Yeah, the healing.
You can take 10 bullets and then hide around the corner and take 10 more bullets. It It makes no sense. I actually think that's a trope that I wish we would abandon, no matter how hard it makes the games, or find creative ways to. So, for example, in Call of Duty, the idea I've had that I think they should do, honestly, is
I can't wait for this.
Two or three bullets, you die, but you instantly, as the player, just inhabit the body of one of the other soldiers. So it becomes a collective narrative experience of this is how many losses in war actually occur. You are the whole unit, you know?
Yeah, and I mean, that would be abandoning the idea that we need protagonists and like plot that's specific to people.
Personally,
I don't know if I care that much either. I think they should try that. I think that's a really interesting idea.
When you play single player Call of Duty, do you give a shit about what that Scottish dude with the sideburns? I don't give a fuck.
You mean Captain Price? Yes, I do, yeah. Sir. I do care about Captain Price.
Chavez all the way.
I also genuinely liked I want to say her name is Farrah. The freedom fighter that you play alongside, she was very good. And I know this is not a Call of Duty Modern Warfare podcast.
No, it is not.
But these are contemporaries, and I do think for shooting mechanics, they bear a little bit of comparison because Modern Warfare is butter. Like the shooting, everything about the war shooting piece of it is as good as it's been for a realistic war shooter, except for the exact thing you said. Sure, no game ever has been realistic about death, and I don't know that I want it to be. I just want it to be fun. Like I want the game experience to be fun, and I think that one of the problems I have as a person who's getting older is that like I'm not that interested in being stumped by a game or like overcoming a very difficult game. I'm more interested in just having the experience and then setting it aside. You know, like I'm more interested in that than I have been when I was younger, where I would have been like, fuck you, Bloodborne. I'm going to figure out how to use this half axe and I'm going to fucking chop the shit out of this giant dog leg. But
I'm finding, though, that I'm equally unable to care about things like patriotism and killing terrorists.
Sure,
like I do find Call of Duty inherently boring because the narrative is the same.
And it's fraught.
I'm like, I get it. Oorah, you sacrifice yourself for your buddy. Go fuck yourself. I don't care about this.
I think that's why I really believe that's why you might consider playing this most recent one.
Outer Worlds. I beat the most recent one already. I'm saying it's the narrative is super boring to me because that's just what the news is. I want to play Mortal Kombat 11 where I'm a demon with a spear fist.
I see. Yeah. You want the
fantasy of it.
The fantasy. Well,
why are we trying to make a more and more realistic simulator of something that's objectively terrible to experience? It's the same reason I fell off Game of Thrones. It's like, I don't need to feel like, but do you get it? This is really what it would be like to see a pregnant woman get stabbed in the stomach. I'm like, I don't want to do that. What are we doing?
I think that in general, I'm inclined to agree with you that I don't want realism or necessarily tragedy for tragedy's sake as a narrative experience. And I like that about Control.
If you have a massive insight that's born out of it, then it feels more worth it. Yeah.
This is my last comment on the Modern Warfare for this podcast, at least. Mm-hmm. I thought that they at least tried to inject the moral grayness of today's warfare into the plot. And I think they did a pretty good job of that. Like, I'm not going to fault them for that.
I felt that they did a job that indicated that they were carefully watering things down to avoid it being problematic in any way. And to me, that's all well and good, but
they're
it's different.
Kids in it. They're like, they're blowing kids away.
Yeah, it felt like the Ghostbusters cartoon where they had like, I don't know. It felt like tokenism
what
to
a,
me, but that's,
the real
but that's
Ghostbusters?
A different.
What
yeah,
a,
the real Ghostbusters.
What a comparison. It's been so long since I even thought about that.
Yeah.
Yeah,
that's all. Yeah, let's get back to Control.
Sure. Well, the only the comparison point there again is that I think the shooting is pretty subpar given its contemporaries. Not horrible, just subpar.
This engine, the Northlight engine, it has this very, and I'm sure their art design also contributes to this feel, but I do feel like the engine itself sort of has a very mechanical, crisp, pristine feel.
It does. I agree with that.
It reminded me of Prey a bit. This is going to be so weird to say, and it's just a gut thing, but it's like, even though I played it on console, it felt like I was playing it on a PC.
It has a PC feeling to it. I agree with that. And I think that Prey is another good comparison, because Prey was a game I liked a little better than this for gameplay and less for mood and story. I like the story and mood better here, but I like the gameplay better in Prey.
I like the enemy design better in this, only in the sense that the one thing I'd fault Prey with, which I did enjoy very much, and I'm sad it's not continuing, was that the enemies were just smoke monsters. I don't know. It just seemed really easy to render.
Yeah, I mean, the enemies here are just like...
zombies.
Yeah, they're zombies. I mean, with like a few different forms, but mostly zombies. I think they could have stretched out a little bit more conceptually about what the enemies are. They're a little bland.
Yeah. Most upsetting to me was the ones tied to the office chairs that you just can't hit. And you're like, look, you're not going to kill me. I'm eventually going to kill you. Just fucking stay still for a second.
Okay,
this is just wasting my time.
That's the thing about that. Again, I feel like that's a little bit us being old, because like I'm going to tell you the most disappointing thing that happened to me about this game, and it's going to really bum you out, but it's a proof that we're now old, right? So the worst part of the game for me experience wise was the maze. And I know everyone's gonna be like, what, that's the best part of the game. I know, but the maze, first of all, they don't do that great of a job telling you what you're supposed to do to navigate the maze. So it took me about 40 minutes to figure out what I'm supposed to do at all.
Sorry, but nested within this, because I think this will be an easy answer, but I'm curious if I'm missing something. Ati is intentionally fully unexplained, right? Like, it doesn't make... no one understands why he knows what he knows and is so powerful.
Yeah, I don't know why he is the all-wise John the Baptist for these aliens.
Or why
aliens.
He knows the way through the maze or whatever.
Yeah, but I don't get it.
But he's regardless, just weird. For whatever reason, he gives you a tape deck that leads you through the maze.
Well, it took me a little while to figure out that's what I needed to do. But I think the answer is, by the way, is he's Finnish. Oh, okay, he's Finnish. So that means he
knows
things.
Yes, he is.
Got it.
How to finish.
I like his weird, stupid euphemisms. Oh, did you get piss in your sock? That one made me laugh. There's a few of them that make me laugh.
I liked fighting the clog. That's a good recurring side quest.
Yes, I like that quest too. So once you get the tape deck, then the choice they made just really frustrated me. So you walk through this maze, which is basically a curated, slightly surreal experience where you have to kill a bunch of enemies and walk through this hallway that turns into, you know, something that looks like a Salvador Dali painting for about 20 minutes.
It's already getting ripped off. If you're playing Jedi Fallen Order, the opening dream sequence is an effect where he falls asleep on the tram and he's in a cube of essentially Death Star style corridors.
Cool.
And they do the exact effect from Control. And I'm like, that means it's a good visual trope. It's already getting incorporated into the AAAs.
I think that, Control is probably a AAA. And I also think
I'd call it a AA personally.
Okay.
But...
fair enough. Fair enough. It's more of a copper top. I got you. Yeah. I think the games are too close together for the two to have been for Jedi Order to have been influenced by Control.
I guess so.
I think it was too far.
Then
in the past.
I wonder about the simultaneity. But yeah,
I mean, but maybe it's one of those Armageddon / Deep Impact things. You know, two ideas at the same time. Just one of them has Morgan Freeman. You know.
Although in that case, it wasn't a coincidence. It was a producer who
switched jobs.
He also stole Bug's Life and turned it into Ants, and stole Dante's Peak and turned it into Volcano.
What a legacy. What a legacy.
Yeah. Good dude. Good dude.
Interesting. So just to finish my griping about the maze. So I know this is everybody's favorite thing. The problem is that I died a bunch of times in the maze because the way it's structured, the enemies sort of appear all around you and there's never really any cover. And that's a challenging thing. But this is why I got so frustrated about not being able to heal, because there's never any cover. So it's like, oh, well, fuck. Okay, well, you know, so I kept dying. And then the problem... The problem
in the maze, there's not much cover, but in the game as a whole, there's usually significant cover. Yeah.
Agreed. The maze is designed in such a way that there's not a lot of cover.
Yes.
So the problem is that while you're doing it, you're listening to this fucking heavy metal music that's like super glammed out, and I hated it. I hated that music very passionately, and then I was stuck there for about 40 minutes. And it kept rebooting the song, and I kept having to do it over and over. And I was getting fucking angry at Control. It's just like, why doesn't this guy listen to something soothing? You know what I mean? Like, why does it need to be glam metal? Like, who gives a fuck?
And yeah, you love the hard rock in Destiny.
I don't actually. The hard rock's the stuff I don't like. Did. No, I like the
techno.
I like the techno for the Hive, and I like the Rise of Iron sort of composed. Orchestral stuff.
Yeah,
I like that stuff. I'm not as big on the remix the Halo theme. I'm not a guitar guy, at least not in my scores. You know, like, why couldn't he listen to, you know, fucking, I don't care, Flying Lotus, like, or jazz or anything else? Like, that is
Finnish. There is a trope: the Finnish have an affinity with metal.
I'm sure that's true, and I don't fucking care. The man's magic. I don't care.
Yeah, Ati makes the least. Yeah, I don't know. I guess their only claim is, you know, there's a bunch of magic shit going on. Who knows? It just slipped in there.
But if I went through all the lore, I bet you there's like one thing that ties it together somehow.
Well, it feels very X-Files to me. In a nutshell, it's essentially that there are other dimensions, and those dimensions intersect with ours at certain times and places, and those events are monitored and controlled by a secret governmental bureau in this house called the Oldest House. It's actually an office building that's larger out inside than it is outside, and it has sort of a cabin in the woods vibe as well, because in there they have cataloged, you know, millions of objects of power, which are things that are affected in such a way when these events occur that they somehow have a weird magical effect or some connection to another dimension.
It's like, and there's like a residual magic in them, like they're horror boxes or something.
And I really liked that idea because it naturally spawns side quests that are inherently interesting, like episodes of X-Files. Like the, I forget what he's even looking at, a mailbox. The guy who can't stop looking at something. There's an object that they know will...
Oh, yeah. And you can't do it or else it explodes or something, right? And
it'll do... All they know is, which I love, it's just such a compelling system, something really bad will happen if someone's not observing it at all times, including you can't even blink,
right?
So they have guys who practice not blinking and are good at it take shifts looking at this thing all the time. So it's like an office building where in every other room there's something that threatens to destroy the world, you know. It's that kind of feeling where the world is full of magic and it wants to kill us. And I like it. It's fun.
I do too. I liked the design of the anomalies. You know, they're sort of the only really non-human thing that you encounter. Mm-hmm. Those weird sort of flashing light anomalies. The art direction and concepts here are very strong. Like, just
well,
very
the board,
strong.
Yeah, there's an entity that speaks to you and seems, I wouldn't say good, but on the good side of neutral. They at least their interests align with killing the Hiss, who are clearly bad.
Functionally,
but
they
remain mysterious. Yeah, we don't know what their objective is in the long term.
Right.
But they're just an upside down black pyramid floating in a white void, and I'm like, that's fucking cool, dude.
And it's imitated in Central Executive too. There's an upside down pyramid that. Either is there's, the same one or they built it there. I can't.
Great symbology, mysticism. Yeah. It's successfully very mysterious and quirky and interesting.
Without sort of putting the wrong kind of decorations around it. Like they chose to not in any way make it feel like magic. We keep using the word magic, which is to say we're using the word supernatural, and it's not. But it's not in any way sort of hocus pocusy, and I think that's the right decision.
No, it's pseudoscience magic.
Right.
Yeah.
And but so again, to contrast it with Alan Wake, that is not pseudoscience magic. That's a little bit closer to, you know, it's a little more on the magic side.
Twin Peaks is more mystical than this.
Yes,
this
mystical.
Is pretending it's science. It's the developers said that they consider it part of the new weird genre.
Oh.
Which basically refers to, if you know what I mean, the very small selection of things that feel like this. Like, you know, the movie with the people with the magic hats and they go through doors. Is it called The Bureau or something like that?
No, you're going to have to walk me through it because I don't know that.
Well, anyway, things that take sci-fi, elevate it to the level of magic, and then impose Kafkaesque bureaucracy on top of it. That's considered a very specific subgenre of sci-fi. New weird.
I think that's how most of the sort of government thriller things that have supernatural elements are done. You know, like I, that's not that new of an idea, is it?
As of the 60s, I think.
Okay, yeah, yeah.
Probably
yeah.
The first examples, yeah.
Sure.
Often with lots of brutalist architecture.
I love the architecture. I love the way the office
modern
looks.
Minimalism. Dudes, okay, this is what New Weird is. It's a guy in a dark room with a green cellophane visor on, smoking a pipe, wearing suspenders, and he has some fantastic piece of technology strapped to his chest.
Right. Like it's almost steampunk, but it's been updated for the 60s.
Yes.
Yeah.
I personally find it more compelling than steampunk,
even
though there's no question that they're equally silly. But I'm like, man, I love dark, smoky rooms with X-Files moldering away in a cupboard somewhere in a government building in the middle of New York City. I love that.
The only thing that's bad about this is that it doesn't have as broad an appeal as most AAA games as an artistic statement, and I don't think that's a bad thing. I just think it's a shame because, as you said, people aren't really playing it. And I'm like, man, I really wish they would, because this is a design company that's really trying. They're really trying. And I love that. Even if I don't always love their choices, I love that they're trying it, and I am compelled to play everything they release for that exact reason. You know, like, so few games are.
I am as well. It's a mixed bag overall, mostly positive.
Yeah.
But like, for example, I liked the shooting, I think, more than you did.
Clearly.
But I liked the full motion video aspect is interesting to me because I have an incredible nostalgic connection to Sega CD full motion video games like Sewer Shark and Night Trap and things like that.
That's your favorite thing to bring up.
It's fun
Sega
as hell.
CD. You love it.
Yeah. But that was the heyday of Tomcat Alley. But anyway, this uses full motion video, which is interesting because it's not commonly used anymore because there's no need to, and it always failed when it was tried in the past.
Yeah.
And I got to say, that was a real mixed bag for me. The guy...
Oh, really?
The guy who played Darling? Professor Darling.
Yeah, did you not like him?
I thought those segments were really charming and endearing.
Agreed.
And it did add something that it was a real actor. By the way, that's the guy who's the voice of Alan Wake. And
that makes sense.
I did not, however, at all. In fact, I disliked and resented and felt like it was lazy that all of the audio logs had these looping videos of just silhouettes. And the audio logs would sometimes be 5 minutes long, and you just see a silhouette of director Trench fading to him chewing on his pipe, fading to him standing, fading to him standing in profile, fading to him chewing on his pipe. And it reminded me of like Scooby-Doo cartoons where you see the background repeat. I was just like, in this day and age, you're just going to loop the footage? Just have a longer shoot and shoot more different angles of that silhouette so that it doesn't have to loop. That seemed weird to me.
I didn't mind the choice for what the images were or how they were presented. I minded that they thought that was enough to do what they were trying
material.
To do with it.
Yes.
Yeah, it's like, dude, this guy who at first I thought, by the way, was Bob Odenkirk. And I was like, holy shit, they got Odenkirk
oh, really?
For this? He looked a little like Odenkirk. I was like, this is going to be fucking cool. He was no Bob Odenkirk. Let's just say that. But
Darling was quite good.
He was quite good. Yeah, I totally agree. Yeah. The problem I had is that it's not enough content. I don't mind the presentation. After a while, it felt lazy. And also, I think that that those segments in particular were some of the most obfuscating. Mm-hmm. You know, like it's always sort of a tough balance to sort of walk when you're trying to obfuscate things for the sake of creating a sense of world and also to not lay out the entire complex backstory all at once and overwhelm the player. But then there were times where it was like, couldn't you just fucking tell her what to do, bro? Like, or like, right. couldn't this be a little clearer? Like, for instance, do you know Dylan's role ultimately in this entire narrative?
Oh, no, not at all. I know that they were both, spoiler alert, if you haven't played this and you're interested in playing it because you've heard the podcast so far.
This is the point where you should stop and maybe 10 minutes from now.
Well, I'd like to talk a little more about the mechanics.
Me too.
But first, let's address Dylan. So the big bad is a sympathetic, so it's not really like a big bad. But I mean, the final tension is between Jesse, the concept of the Bureau itself, and her brother Dylan, because she finds out that, and I like how it's kind of slowballed. Like,
agreed. Yeah.
It's not like Dylan is the most important case that ever came through this bureau. It's just a thing that happened in this endless maze of various cases.
They build a containment unit for the guy. He's definitely a key part of this.
He's up there, but I like how the world implied. I like things that have that the warehouse at the end of Indiana Jones feel where mm-hmm, it's like, mm-hmm. wow, this is just one of millions of stories tucked away.
All these are arcs. Yeah. How many arcs are there? I'm just kidding.
So, I mean, like, I would argue that the motel that can teleport you to any time space is of equal import as Dylan. But regardless,
that's
most
by the
important
way,
to Jesse.
That hotel, mm-hmm. just quickly, is the most Alan Wake thing in this world.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, feels very Alan Wake-y.
The hotel that's sort of a hub that allows you to travel to different areas. Yeah,
definitely.
And it's like a Twin Peaks style hotel. Mm-hmm. Yeah,
it just feels like part of that game more than the rest of it.
Her brother and she were targeted by the FBC because they were candidates to be the new director. Because they have to choose a new director from time to time. And basically the way they choose, it's very much like the Sorting Hat, but it kills you. If you hold the service weapon, and that allows you to commune with the board, which is an extraplanar entity that helps determine it. They're sort of in a weird alliance with the FBC. And I believe it's implied that you go mad or you kill yourself or something if you're not fit, but they try to identify good applicants and have them interact with the service weapon, and it imprints on you, and that means you're the new director. So,
which, by the way, is a thing that should have been in Harry Potter. The Sorting Hat killing a few people because they're not good enough. Holy shit, would that have been good?
Being, like, expelled, and then it just slowly crushes the child's skull while they scream.
Yes, that's what I wanted to see right there in the Sorcerer's Stone.
I want to go home.
I don't need to be a wizard. I don't.
It's okay.
That's right. And you shan't be.
The headless body falls to the floor and his name?
Clearly Gannon? Chewing it. Yeah, the hat's clearly chewing the head. Yeah.
Dumbledore just says, next child.
All right, who's next then?
She wants to, there was an event where they were both, as children, contacted by the Bureau because they were near one of these big rift events, and they were affected in such a way that they seemed like good candidates to be directors. They captured Dylan, but she got away.
And destroyed a key object, or destroyed the majority of a key object, basically.
They confiscated, a slide projector, because she and her brother, that's what eventually caused the rift, is she and her brother discovered an object of power, which was a slide projector, and you could travel through the slides, like Myst style, into different worlds. And that's a very powerful object, so they confiscated it. It's in the Bureau now. You find it, of course, and use it. But she escaped and somehow, I don't fully understand why they wouldn't recover her later, but she just grew up and lived her life.
Why didn't they take her in? It's like,
It's that's weird.
They observe her. Clearly they like keep tabs on her for the rest of her life. And yet Dylan is such a big problem that they've got him in, what is essentially a containment tank. and have driven him into, you know, basically into insanity. Like, the dude's totally insane by the time we
Yeah. Because basically they tested him, he failed the test, he went nuts, and they sort of quarantined him. And we find out that the board, which I still maintain seems ominous and may turn evil in a future installment of this series.
Which but, there will definitely be. There'll yeah, definitely be a sequel.
I hope so.
Yeah,
but for now,
be.
The board is allied with the Bureau and the humans in the Bureau against this sort of infection, this sentient infection, of course, that's evil, that's trying to destroy all the universes everywhere. And it's called the Hiss. And the Hiss gets to Dylan. So Dylan becomes this very powerful psychic that is, you know, hypnotized and evil and shit. And Jesse wants to save him. Because it's her brother.
And that's like the premise of it. But also, yeah. I think it's implied that Dylan earlier in his life had a role in bringing the Hiss here. Like it's like,
yes.
It's
like connecting so, it to our world in particular.
Right. So like the end of the game suggests that the former director Trench, who I'm going to always call shitty Bob Odenkirk, was the one who was actually sort of overcome by the Hiss.
He was compromised by the Hiss.
Yes.
Yeah.
But and so the mechanics of that are not entirely clear, but it seems pretty clear to me that Dylan is also a part of the early method by which the Hiss invade.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? Like he's part of that process, certainly because he's overcome by the Hiss, but also because he's its advocate, just like Jesse is the advocate for Polaris.
And I think the event at Ordinary, their town, is I love the section where you see the tiny version of their town.
I really like that too.
I think that event is the first recorded time the Hiss like breached into our universe. So yeah, it's not their fault, but like it's all. And another thing is, it is kind of lost. Like I would argue, there are things that are not clear, and maybe they'll be clear in future installments, or maybe not. Like,
but it's not. It's not dumb, and a collection of
dumb.
A lot of.
It's good.
See, Lost had to me. Lost's big problem, aside from not having a plan,
it's
is
better
that,
than Lost. Lost is dumb.
Yeah, and Lost also had like everything was part of Lost. Eternity was part of Lost, Fate was a part of Lost, polar bears and science and demigods and all this stuff. This world is at least contained, even if everything in it's not explained.
There are types of supernatural things that wouldn't be in this world. It's
right.
selective.
Right.
It's selective, and that's what gives it flavor and
yes.
like a unique feel. But
whereas Lost is definitely in the Tyson zone. Like anything.
My question
is acceptable.
Remains in terms of traditional storytelling, setup and payoff style,
sure.
Which they mostly adhere to. There's weird anomalies, like for example, Dylan very pointedly saying with the camera zooming in on him, a moment of lucidity, and he says, "Don't trust Polaris." That never pays off, and maybe it'll pay off in a sequel, but basically all you find out about Polaris is, oh, Polaris, this thing you thought was just a voice in your head that's good, it's actually this thing called Hedron that's a voice in your head that's good.
And now
okay.
has
like,
activated
it stays good.
In
it
you.
Continues to help you. Yeah, it's not,
well,
nothing really changes.
I do think that the words good and evil sort of don't apply to Polaris, and maybe not even the Hiss. Like, certainly the Hiss act evil, and they're super red. Everything's real red when the Hiss get around.
I would argue the Hiss is stylized in a way that evokes evil, but
sure,
the board, the board is the most interesting character to me because there are very few games that feature a faction that just evokes neutral power. You get the feeling that the board is helping you because of mysterious reasons you could never comprehend.
Right.
And if those reasons change, they would totally wipe out humanity. We don't understand what they're doing.
Right.
And I love the restraint in maintaining that you cannot know the mind of the board. The board just is.
it's a classic sort of Star Trek-y character.
Yeah.
Also, it's like the Nine in Destiny. Same
oh,
idea.
Oh, definitely. But
you
what
know.
Is Hedron? Why is it important to discover that Polaris is Hedron? That's what I didn't get a lot of
satisfaction. Other than a thing you can plug a lot of tubes into, it seems like nothing. Like it's a shell that contains a consciousness that was already free.
I'm just saying that plot beat didn't make me go, that explains so much. That's so satisfying to find out, you know?
No, this is not like this is not like a game like Horizon Zero Dawn where
very the plot satisfying is
pretty
climax.
Contained. Yeah, it's pretty contained, and like a sequel means the world has to get bigger. I don't think the world has to get bigger for Control 2. You know, like
she could stay director and just deal with another crisis that the Bureau faces in the same setting, essentially.
Agreed. Although, did you see the outfit that she gets when you win the game? When you beat the game? Did you see the outfit she gets?
I did, but I forget what
it is. It's like a weird, she has this weird fucking barrette in the back of her head that like, and her hair's up in this way. It's like, what? Like, the outfit was like really bad in a way that really bothered me. Like, I goes like, that looks really
maybe
dumb.
That's a hint at the sequel. You open the European, Western European branch, and it's just a SimCity game where you like build up the, you know, the new offices.
It felt like, I mean, because everything else in this game was pretty intentional. Like, they were pretty careful with things. Like, that choice, believe it or not, was like, so is she going to go evil? Because that's a really foreign version of who she, like, she was presented to us in a very...
Foreign things are evil.
Of course.
You heard it here first. Yes. That's what Adam says.
Yeah. I'm yes, Mark, put it on my tombstone. Foreign stuff, evil.
Barrettes are the sign of evil.
Sign of the times, an evil barrette. It's just like the way she was dressed was like she'd become this sort of like emperor of this place in a way that was like, so is she going to be a bad guy? Maybe I'm thinking too much out of this.
I'm along for the ride, whatever they do. But so it sounds like we agree, though, that the story is very strong and enticing, but to a lesser degree, but in the same way as Lost, they bring up so much interesting shit that it's hard to pay it all off. And indeed, they don't pay it all off. And the ending sort of happens and washes over you. And you're like, oh, that was the end. Okay.
It's funny that you say that because they also have a false ending. Which like a very, like a, they have an initially disappointing ending.
Where you get trapped in the mind loop.
Yeah, and like, oh no, you just the bad guys win, that's it, and you're like, oh fuck, really?
Yeah, the hiss trap you in one, your first day of working as a secretary at the Bureau endlessly, right? And you actually have to do it over and over several times,
which
before,
I was
of
like
course.
I get it, fuckers.
I'm like, the facade is gonna start to crumble, let's get on with it.
Can we I straightened enough coffee mugs and delivered enough mail, so give me the fucking cutscene, please.
Next plot point.
The game definitely tests your patience if you're not accustomed to like letting the game pace itself.
Yeah.
You know, I would
argue.
That's
what I mean, is I found the pacing in Act 3 odd. It felt rushed.
The game, it is a little rushed, but I also felt like this game was, for the amount of content it actually is, still a little long. You know, I didn't think it was too long, like it was bad long. I thought it was too long, like for the amount of content this is a little bit drawn out.
For me, because each side quest was like a separate X-Files style adventure, like, oh, there's this whole species called the Mold, and we learn about their universe, and we help shore up the breach. Oh, there's this thing called the Clog, and it's sort of a funnier episode. It's a parody of being a sewage worker, and you have to go burn it out. Oh, there's this thing the guy can't blink or admit. Like, I literally found each subplot so interesting that I could do a dozen more. It really felt like a season of the X-Files to me.
It could definitely have DLC where you're the director solving problems
and you just
in this
deal
world.
With shit.
Yeah, you should.
I found the writing interesting and imaginative, the various shit you dealt with.
I totally agree with that. I think that there is
that
room
thing,
for that.
They have a thing trapped in a room that just won't stop spinning, and they can't figure out what to do with it. There's great stuff in here.
Right. How do you flush it into a space toilet? Like, they don't know how to do that. Yeah, totally. I agree. That's a good idea for DLC, and I'm sure that's what they're going to do, is like, hey, let's just do episodes from the Bureau of Control, you know, while you're the director. That's not a bad idea. Nonetheless, I'm gonna pull up one of my favorite games that we have yet to cover, BioShock. And say, so BioShock's probably about another 5 hours to the campaign, if that. It's like a little longer, but not a lot longer. Wouldn't you agree?
One?
Yeah, BioShock 1, yes.
It's been so long, I could not pretend that I can accurately remember how many hours it
Control's
was.
Control's like 6 to 10 hours, I would say. And BioShock, the single player game, is like 10 to 15, I want to say, if I remember it correctly. The thing about BioShock is, first of all, there's no, you don't go back to stuff. But second of all, each world has its own sort of self-contained narrative that's really satisfying with a lot of little tendrils to tug at. And the gameplay loop to it is also, I would say, equally fun or more fun. But you're never bored of, you're never sort of like, okay, what are we getting at here with BioShock? Because they always keep you on point. Whereas Control, I think there are tasks and times where you're just sort of getting to the next place and like...
I mean. The B plots are all stellar, but the A plot is diffuse. The ending is not a good payoff for the setup. The whole idea of her...
It's not bad. It's just not amazing.
It's not terrible, but it's not... There's no reveal of what her brother is or what his role is that makes you go, whoa, imagine that. That's so fucked up. Or anything. You're just like, oh, okay. That's this new information. It just kind of goes along. He let the hiss in? I kind of guessed that at this point. There's nothing else. That's it. Yeah. Okay.
He looks evil. Look at him. So I know where this is going. I would say that like if this was a movie, you would give it a B- and feel like that was a pretty good movie.
Yeah.
You know, like and that's again, in video games, that's a pretty great story.
Oh, it is. And the voice acting is phenomenal across the board, which is not always
it's funny you say that.
They focus on. Oh, you hated it?
I loved it. Oh. Except for Jessie, who I thought was okay.
Oh, okay.
I didn't think she was great.
I think she was great, but it's impossible to elucidate why.
I didn't think as a performance that she felt like there was all that history to her point of view. Like she seemed very sort of like I didn't get a sense that there was a lot of deep history to how she felt about things. It was very reactionary. And that's a high level critique, but I felt that
it
way.
Is. I think it's more of the pacing again. You're also just dropped in. It's an interesting story. It doesn't follow a 3-act structure by any stretch. It's just like, you're here now. A couple hours in, you realize, oh, I'm looking for my brother? Oh, okay. And like, it's just the plot details are parceled out in an interesting way.
Yeah, I mean,
that is not traditional.
I would say that the first... It's not linear, but it does sort of have acts to it. Like I would argue that once you find Dylan, that's sort of the end of the main plot, and then things start to wrap up. Now it's like, now we got to wrap stuff up. It just takes a while, and there's some finished
My
death metal.
My big sticking point is that Ati is never explained in any way.
Agreed.
And
we need more about him.
Nor the fact that if he is this powerful that the Bureau is not aware of this or has no interest in him. And then furthermore, that your brother ominously says, don't trust Polaris. And then there's a big reveal that Polaris is actually this thing called Hedron that is another extra dimensional entity that's been speaking to you since you were a child. And I'm like, that's what I already assumed Polaris was. All you did was change the name. I had already guessed that that's what that was.
You put it inside a really weird shape that tubes came out of and made me fight 100 guys to get to it, and then it broke.
Yeah.
Cool.
Yeah.
But also not cool.
it's no, fine.
I agree. I mean, I mean, if we sit here and chip away at this long enough, it's definitely going to fall apart. I have one sort of philosophical question for you before I move on from this. And that is, do you think that a video game, knowing that most video games are trying to be franchises, has an obligation to explain all of its elements the way a movie would have to? Or are you comfortable with things like Ati, knowing that a later installment would probably go into who he is?
It's the same as a TV show. It's kind of a trap because you can't know till all is said and done.
Right.
And it's always a gamble. If I do believe that they owe it to me to explain Ati in a way that is satisfying and clever and makes me go, that's fun. That makes sense. And if they never do, I'll go, that was some bullshit. But I leave room for the fact that the story is not over yet. But at the end of the day, it's extra. If your story is a mystery box that promises satisfying creative twists that will make me go, that, oh, in retrospect, now I see why that makes sense. If that's the genre you live within,
yeah, thriller.
I just feel genre. Like you're promising that you can pull that off. And if the more time you have me invest doing the mystery part, the more I expect the payoff to be very satisfying and cathartic. And if you biff it, you wasted my time even more than you would have if it were shorter. So
agreed. I feel worse about it if you had promised less. Yeah, I totally agree
exactly.
with that. Like, for comparison's sake, actually, the movie Annihilation comes to mind a little bit, which is a really good movie. And this is not as good as that. And I think that the guys and gals behind this game should invest a little bit more in some of those narrative movies that are in this genre and see what comes from that. Because I would like to see that, you know?
Yeah. For me, the comparison point is Upgrade, I would say, since it's recent.
I see that.
I really wanted the ending of this to be as concise and impactful as the ending of Upgrade, and it was not.
No. It was a little bit more truncated than that.
Yeah.
I feel like I've said all the important things I wanted to say about why the gameplay is meh, but I don't want to snub that conversation out if you wanted to argue with me about it.
No, I said what I was gonna say, and we kind of got to wrap up. But
I just want to say that
I would just underline what I said, but there's nothing more to unpack. I found it very crisp in a way that feels technical, which I don't necessarily always like. But at the same time, it's the most realistic, satisfying telekinesis simulator I've played ever in my life, and that's an accomplishment, and it was satisfying to me and fun. The shooting, I would give a 75 out of 100 in terms of, like, yep, there's shooting that's much better, but I didn't think it was bad. It felt fine.
I like the
stuff.
Way it felt to hurl things at people, and I think
I really liked the complicated, detailed upgrade system. I found it very satisfying.
I did too, except for I didn't feel like you got a lot more powerful from that. If you had, then I would be more in favor of it. I tried every kind of gun. I never found the sniper rifle version
the
and the
sniper
shotgun
gun
version
was basically
was
pointless.
Yes.
Oh, I thought, yeah.
Oh, I like the sniper version, although it was hard to use.
Oh, well, there you go.
But I would generally, you know, I'd be launching pieces of things at the enemies and then powering up the gun, shoot, then launch.
In a game where the enemies appear out of the air already aware of you, there's no such thing in this game as walking up on a group of enemies who are standing guard and they don't notice you.
There's no stealth to this game.
I didn't understand what the sniper rifle was for because they're always running at you immediately, full speed. Whip out that shotgun, man.
The shotgun is the most useful.
No, the most useful is throwing concrete blocks at people's heads. That's what
agreed.
I love.
but so again, to bring up BioShock, I would say the feeling of telekinesis is less good in BioShock than here. But
earlier technology.
Yeah, but the game is more creative about how to use gunplay and telekinesis together than Control is. A lot more creative about it. And I feel like that's another area where we could improve.
Well, you don't even have to, like, you don't have to pull ammo in or anything like that because the gun regenerates its own ammo.
I like that about it.
I like it, but it gives you less to do with your telekinesis. Telekinesis is primarily for grabbing objects and throwing them at people, which is endlessly fun to do, but it is simple. I agree.
It's not that it's bad. It is endlessly fun. I agree. There's not more to it. You know what
no,
I mean? Like, for
not.
Instance, if you have a telekinetic power, if you and I really had it, wouldn't you be spending some time pulling pillars down on top of dudes, especially when they get those rock shields? When instead of, like, hurling a rock at a rock shield, it's like, why don't I just pull this pillar down on top of him? You know what I mean? Just stuff like that.
Yeah, there's no chandeliers or, like, there's nothing that falls from above. Yeah, there's more they could have done in theory. It's like, the button only does one thing, meaning there are pillars there, but you would just pull a chunk off and throw it at the guy like you do with everything.
And also, at a certain point, it feels a little like a cheat that you get to float but never fly. You know what I mean? Like, so you brought up Spider-Man earlier, and I was like, ooh, that's exactly the game to bring up because Spider-Man is way better at feeling good with the power-ups than this game is, though they both sort of have a similar idea about how to do it.
You know? I disagree.
Really?
I thought the power-ups in Spider-Man all sucked except the very first one you start with, which is the one where you spin around and shoot web in every direction. All the other power-ups don't do anything.
I like the charging up ones.
Oh, really? I thought spinning and shooting web everywhere remained by far the best attack throughout the entirety of the game.
Perhaps the game designers are actually ahead of us here because they're proving that there are hills to die on. You know what I mean? Like, and that if both these people feel passionately about both these things, then something is working in this game. You know what I mean? Like, I feel like if you feel that way and I feel the other way about Spider-Man, that's kind of a win for the developer.
No, I wanted to fly in full three-dimensional free space. I agree.
I did too, and especially because the enemies could do it.
As I was floating.
Yeah.
I was like, damn it, I want to, well, it's still fun. It's still fun.
It's totally still fun. I agree.
But I had that moment where I was like, oh, it's just floating? Oh, okay, okay.
Oh,
damn,
cool.
But okay.
Yeah. Exactly. That's exactly how I felt.
And I thought like, well, I mean, I can't program a video game. I don't know. Maybe it's really hard to program
this
flying.
This is better than
I
can do. I found myself thinking a lot about sort of like, how would I create some of these things with cameras and lights? I was really thinking about that.
I was rooting for the team behind the game.
Big
I
time.
Felt like a lot of goodwill towards them and I would cut them slack. So that's something to think about.
Also, it's funny because like their other games, Alan Wake and Quantum Break, both had more hype than this game. And I think this game is better than either of those two games. It's kind of I feel like maybe because Quantum Break was a bit of a letdown because there was a lot of hype behind that game and it wasn't that great, that people were less excited about Control. And it's like, man, I wish that Control was the property that we had gotten hyped about because it would have lived up to it, I would argue.
Yeah.
You know.
All right, final checkpoint. Keep or delete.
Today I'm going to give you some straightforward advice on how to deal with naughty kids. How about instead of timeouts, time ins? Time for you to start paying some bills. I'm J.B. Smoove, and that was a full episode of my new podcast, Straightforward. Inspired by guaranteed straightforward pricing from AT&T Fiber. Get what you want without the complicated. AT&T Fiber, live like a gigillionaire. Available wherever you get your podcast. Limited availability in select areas. Visit AT&T.com/hypergig for details.
Open a limited-time 11-month certificate at Kemba Financial Credit Union. At 5.25% APY, it's more than triple the national average, plus it's a safe and secure way to grow your money. Visit your local branch or kemba.org/cd for details. Offer expires May 31st, 2024. APY equals annual percentage yield. Restrictions apply. $500 minimum and $250,000 maximum deposit. Advantage status required. Comparison based on bank rate average. Federally insured by NCUA.
Zero Foxtrot isn't just a brand, it's a way of life. Founded and operated by veterans, Zero Foxtrot's unique apparel and gear echoes the grit of the warrior culture. Zero Foxtrot dedicates itself to producing content, honoring the sacrifices of forgotten heroes of the past, and connecting history to the present. Embark on a journey with Zero Foxtrot today at ZeroFoxtrot.com. It's not merely our products, it's about the ethos that we embody. Rugged, resilient, and timeless.
To the surprise of no one, I'm going to delete this game. Not because it's bad, but because I don't think that there's anything about it that needs to be retained. I think there's better versions of everything it does somewhere else.
Control, I'll keep.
You're going to keep this. You're keeping this. You deleted Halo 1 and you're keeping Control.
Control is a much better game than Halo 1.
Absolutely not.
Halo 1 is boring to play.
Absolutely.
The plot is just kill the enemy. You killed the enemy.
I disagree.
The enemy are aliens.
I disagree. All right. That's
well,
the
we
plot.
Did a whole episode on your boring ass game you love. They can listen to that.
Yes, you can. You can listen to all of our episodes on the Small Beans Network.
Yeah. Yeah.
Including our lesser known podcast series, How to Fix Harry Potter.
I don't know. Is that a thing? I don't
know
if people care about whether we have guests, but I did want to address it. I just moved to San Francisco, so we're in a transitional period, which is why there was no guest this time, nor will there be next episode.
I would
probably have guests here and there again.
Yeah, this is the game where I wish we had brought Dave in for this one, because I know he really loves this game.
Yeah.
But we will have guests. We both are very passionate about maintaining that continuity. But right now, we're figuring out how to not be in a warm embrace physically while we do this podcast.
Yeah. And honestly, it doesn't affect the view count, at least for this show, whether we have guests or not. So the people love us. They love our shit, dude.
That's so kind of those people to love our shit.
Thanks, people.
Thank you for loving my shit.
More shit next time on One Upsman Shit.
Work complete.
Open a limited-time 11-month certificate at Kemba Financial Credit Union. At 5.25% APY, it's more than triple the national average, plus it's a safe and secure way to grow your money. Visit your local branch or kemba.org/cd for details. Offer expires May 31st, 2024. APY equals annual percentage yield. Restrictions apply. $500 minimum and $250,000 maximum deposit. Advantage status required. Comparison based on bank rate average. Federally insured by NCUA.
Zero Foxtrot isn't just a brand, it's a way of life. Founded and operated by veterans, Zero Foxtrot's unique apparel and gear echoes the grit of the warrior culture. Zero Foxtrot dedicates itself to producing content, honoring the sacrifices of forgotten heroes of the past, and connecting history to the present. Embark on a journey with Zero Foxtrot today at ZeroFoxtrot.com. It's not merely our products, it's about the ethos that we embody. Rugged, resilient, and timeless.
Tired of pickup truck bed chaos? Meet Decked, game-changing USA-made full bed-length drawers for tools and gear. Waterproof, dustproof, lockable, secure. Whether you're working, hunting, fishing, camping, or just getting out of town. And introducing Decked Deco Cases. Tough, modular, problem-solving cases built for the truck, job site, campsite, or garage. Say goodbye to random bins and tie-downs. Order now at Decked.com/iHeart for free shipping. Decked, your truck, your rules. Decked.com/iHeart.